This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Curating the Portland Eco Film Festival, which kicks off tomorrow evening at
okay,
Howard Theater.
So isn't this timely? And they'll be here with us for this first half of the show to talk about that film series that extends until what, September? It's once a month, though?
Yeah, through September. It's monthly screenings of environmentally based films.
So we've got, many of these films are, at least half the films, are really related to topics that we cover here on the Dirtbag with great regularity: soil, fruit, and honey or honeybees. I thought, well, this is an ideal time there. So
and even music.
Well, of course, that goes without saying. First off, let's have some announcements. Jim's got one plant sale that's happening in Eugene.
Yeah, we're it's surprisingly, well, with all this beautiful weather we've had, we're kind of at the end of the garden show time. I mean, there are still some plant sales going on. The last one that I know of, there's one in Canby coming up pretty soon, the Master Gardeners Fair. That's the weekend, would be March 4th, I believe. That weekend.
Is that the big garden garden palooza? Is that what they call it, or is that something else?
Garden palooza just happened.
Okay, we missed that one.
This is a very, very big show. It's really amazing how many nurseries show up for it. There are just, I mean, hundreds. Every little nursery around seems to have a booth there. So that's kind of fun. That's at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. And then the following weekend, for listeners in the Eugene area or down south in the valley, there's the Oregon Plant Fair at Alton Baker Park, which is I believe it runs from 9 until about 2. It's a short time, but it's a lot, very intense, and lots of cool plants and also garden art and so forth down there.
And I've got a couple of announcements, people that have sent in some plant sales. And this reminds me to let you know, if you do have a garden event that you'd like us to announce, send it to us through the KBOO website or mail it to us. That's how one of these came to us today. The Eastmoreland Garden Club has their annual Mother's Day plant sale happening on Saturday, May 11th. Are we going to have another show before then? Jeez, I can't remember what is the next date. We will have another one before then. May 8th is our next dirt bag here. But this is at the Eastmoreland Garden it says located at the Eastmoreland Garden at 2425 Southeast Bybee Boulevard. And lots of things happening there. A lot of things for sale, including vegetable starts, perennials, herbs. There's also a children's area, gathering area. Contact Marty at 503-771-3710 if you want more information on that. Also another plant sale happening that exact same day, May 11th, but out in Gresham at the Covenant Presbyterian Church, the Petal Pusher Garden Club. Happening from 9 to 3 at 18630 Southeast Division. That's the Covenant Presbyterian Church. And they'll have a fine selection of trees, Japanese maples and dogwoods, and also shrubs, veggies, herbs, tubers, perennials, annuals, natives, hanging baskets, and more at unbelievable great prices.
Wow.
What more could we ask? All right, Jim, our plant of the month this month is Asian pears.
Yes.
A tasty treat.
Yes.
And a beautiful tree at this time.
I thought that would be appropriate because it's so outrageously beautiful in bloom. Trees are just covered with flowers right now, and the promise of those flowers, of course, is this great crop of fruit, which sometimes can break branches. It's so heavy. There are really two types of Asian pears, and they grow really well here. Both types do. One is kind of the light-skinned, more yellowish, perhaps yellowish-green-skinned fruit. It's usually the earlier type. That's usually earlier. With those varieties would be Shinseki and Nijiseki, for example.
How early is early?
August.
Okay.
Yeah, August into very early part of September. The those are typically pretty thin-skinned and somewhat delicate. And this is one of those fruits that really needs to be grown locally because you can't pick it green. It does not ripen off the tree. Mm. So if you once it's picked, it's whatever good it is, it's going to be good then, and that's it.
This is opposite now of the European pears. Just compare and contrast here.
That's right. The European pears, typically you pick them firm, and they do ripen, and they ripen after you pick them. They're not really ready to eat off the tree. So the Asian pears are the opposite. And kind of a funny story, back in the day when Asian pears were first being introduced back in the 80s, I think the orchardists thought they could handle them like apples because some people call them apple pear because of their shape. So they would pick them firm and throw them into the bins and take them to the markets. And the consumers would try them and think, something, this is not much better than wet cardboard. So that was sort of discouraging. And they had to go back to the drawing board and figure out that, you had to pick them when they're ripe. Then now we buy them with a little mesh bag around them, which keeps them from getting bruised and can be transported. So that's the story with the early part of Asian pears. There are the second type are brown skin Asian pears, which include varieties like Chojuro, Large Korean, Raja, which is one of my favorites. They're typically thicker skinned, ripen later. So you're looking September, even into October. And they'll store well too. These store typically better than the light skin ones.
And they still ripen, though, on the tree.
They still ripen on the tree. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. I really like Asian pears in our climate. They do well here. There are a couple of varieties like Hosui that we've found out weren't so good for us, but most of them do really well. Like the Large Korean, for example, it can get as big as a grapefruit. And one of the tricks in getting big Asian pears is thinning because they set typically a lot of fruit per cluster. So once those fruit have gotten to be the size of a dime or thereabouts, it's a good idea to go and thin them.
Thickly do we thin them?
If you want a really big fruit, thin to one fruit per cluster. So just leave one. If you just can't quite get around doing that, then go leave like three. But
What if the cluster? And this is, I'm asking from personal experience here. What if the clusters are about 1 inch apart?
The clusters themselves are one inch apart?
Right, or 2 inches apart.
Yeah. Well, then you could try doing the one per cluster thing.
Still there.
It still should work, but you may want to remove, if they're really close, you might want to remove a cluster every once in a while.
Because my shojura, or how is it really pronounced?
Chojuro.
Chojuro, okay.
But that's not the Japanese pronunciation necessarily.
I'm just plagued with smaller fruit, and I do thin.
Uh-huh.
Could it be a water issue? These are kind of juicy fruits.
Yeah, they do need irrigation. Deep watering once a week is what they get at our place, and that's usually enough to get them nice to get a nice size fruit.
How big do your shojuros get generally?
Bigger than a baseball. And this sometimes quite a bit larger than that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm deficient then.
Mm. So we have to do a consultation.
Yes.
But they are really, some fruits struggle in our climate, but Asian pears are really happy here. Pollination is another question for them. Like most European pears will pollinate them, but it's a good idea if you've got the room to have two Asians because they do bloom a little earlier than the Europeans do. And there's a couple of Chinese varieties, Seri and Yali, that bloom even earlier than the typical Japanese Asian pears. So for those, you might want to have another Asian around to make sure you get good pollen set.
What about sun exposure? What's the requirement there? Is more better?
More is better. Half-day sun is okay. With most fruits, that's the case. Mm-hmm. There are very few fruits that like to be in shade, and these include these. The thing that I like about Asian pears is that most of the varieties, the ones that we're familiar with, really are pretty disease resistant, which is nice. I mean, we don't see apple scab on them. Occasionally, get a coddling moth.
Yeah, that's the only pest I've seen in, but not the apple maggot. Fortunately.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen one of those.
Well, good. We don't have them out at our place, so I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
You don't have them. But the bees must like them, Glenn, being a bee.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed, they do.
Yeah.
The Europeans are now out, too, so there is, now we just have to get the weather for good bee flight. And it's been happening the last couple of days, but now we're in for some rainy weather where the insects don't fly, or not very much.
I was doing something interesting yesterday and the day before, which is I'm trying to do a little breeding work to try to create some new varieties. And I've been bagging flowers of both European and Asian pears and put a paper bag, put a bag over them, keep the bees from pollinating mm-hmm. them. And then you bag two different varieties, for example, you can take the bag off after they're in full bloom and take flowers from one and go to the other and play bee. You have to make the right sounds, of course.
Okay. Yes, yeah.
And then you put the bag back over those pollinated flowers so the bees can't get in there and mess with them and put some sort of foreign pollen in there. And then after about a week or so, once the fruit is set, take the bag off and
mark that.
Mark it with a label. And then take when that fruit ripens, take the seeds and plant them. And it's like Christmas. What are you going to get?
And Easter. You don't know what you're going to find. That's right.
That's right. Yeah.
After you hide it,
yep.
I mean plant it, right? All right, so that's Asian pears. If you have any questions on Asian pears or any other questions for your garden, for you, please don't hesitate to give us a call, 503-231-8187. We'll take our first musical break now, and the closest I could come to pear, Jim, with my apologies, this is called Prickly Pear, but it's close enough, and this is by Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. Levy on harmonica there. Pretty tasty stuff, just like those Asian pears.
Yeah, it didn't sound too prickly to me.
So. No. Okay, Doug and Don, we've got the Portland Ecofilm Festival here. And from what I've read online and looking at the titles here, you've got six titles here. What a fantastic lineup. Tell us about each of them if you want or how you want to
Thanks. Yeah,
do
well,
it.
This was... you know, this is the first annual, and it's something that I've been thinking of for a while, is that, you know, we're in Portland and we're on the Hollywood Theater, and there's not really an environmental film fest here. So we really thought that Portland audiences would really get into this, and it would be a good event to put on. So Chipotle came on as a sponsor to help fund it. So we put it together and decided the first incarnation is going to be monthly screenings from April through September. So it starts Thursday night with a film called Symphony of the Soil, which is by Deborah Coons Garcia, who's Jerry Garcia's widow, who's also a filmmaker. We're actually flying her in. She's going to come in and do a Q&A. It's a beautiful film about soil.
And you'll have a panel afterwards, or maybe just at least one person?
Tomorrow night we're going to have Deborah Coons Garcia and Naomi Montaker from Naomi's Organic Farm Supply. She's going to be hosting the Q&A with the filmmaker.
I see.
And the audience can toss out all their questions. The film is a really beautiful kind of lyrical love story to soil, global love story. So it's got a lot of scientific information in it. It's got a lot of kind of ancient knowledge presented, but it's also just like a beautiful film, just visually stunning. So I'm hoping that folks will come out and have lots of good questions for the filmmaker after.
As we know and talk about on the Dirtbag frequently, the importance of soil, no matter what type of gardening you're doing, from rose to orchards, to lawn or veggies, you know, the soil is key. And as they say, they're not making any more of it. So it's important to take care of what we have. It's really a non-renewable resource in most respects. So that's the Symphony of the Soil happening April 11th, tomorrow, that is.
Tomorrow.
At 7 p.m.
7.
At the Hollywood Theater there in downtown Hollywood.
Yeah, Northeast Portland. And we've made a lot of changes to the theater. There's new seats and new screen, new sound system. So if you haven't been in a while, come check it out. And this is a good excuse to come down.
Right.
And pizza. Don't forget about the pizza.
We've got
pizza and beer.
Beer and wine. We're actually going to have music before the film, too, for as people are coming in. There's a band called Blue Flags and Black Grass, kind of doing old-time folk bluegrass music just to make it a little bit more fun. So
great.
And then coming up in May, The Fruit Hunters. Jim's ears should be picking up on this one. Tell us about this.
Yeah, well, it's a great film about exotic fruit and the it's sort of going across culture, history, and geography to show how intertwined we are with the fruits that we eat. The actor, actually, Bill Pullman, is a big fruit grower and a fruit advocate, and he's actually in the film, and we've invited him to the screening as well. And he's very interested in coming. He's working out his schedule, but hopefully that'll happen, and we'd have a really interesting night.
Where's he located?
He's in California.
California, okay.
Yeah.
Part of the film concerns his efforts to build a community orchard in the Hollywood Hills in his own neighborhood that would be just open to the public and do a lot of educational programs to kind of reinforce community connections and also people's connection to fruit. It's another really beautiful film, and it'll definitely make you realize what a small portion of fruits we get to see in our stores here.
That reminds me of a friend of mine, Tim, has been involved with the it's a community orchard in the Sabin area in Northeast Portland, just off of near the Sabin School there, where it's just a kind of a pass. It's much wider than the alley. I mean, it's 50 feet wide or so, but it goes between two streets. It's just a walking path through there, cement path. But this community group has really done a fantastic job of putting in all sorts of different types of fruit trees and fruit bushes and whatnot, just available to the I'm assuming at some point the community will be able to harvest them. I guess I shouldn't be spilling too much here, I guess, but that's near Sabin School, and you could find it quite easily. If you just walk around the school, you'll see it across the street there. So
that's the Portland Fruit Tree Project, and one of the things that we've been trying to do with the festival, and this is how we ended up here today, is we're trying to bring people on who will participate in the screenings as panels afterwards. So the Portland Fruit Tree Project is going to have someone helping us out and appearing at our panel after the Fruit Hunters screening.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea behind the festival is not just to throw a film up on the screen and that's it, but to create a dialogue around that film. So each screening will have either a Q&A with a filmmaker or a panel discussion with local experts. So there'll be that aspect to the evening that hopefully people will get more out of it than just, you know, just watching the film, but a discussion around it as well.
And maybe inspired,
hopefully, yes,
to plant their own. Okay, that's on May 9th. Are these all Thursdays?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Some of them are, but yeah, it's once a month, and we pick dates that either worked with, you know, filmmakers coming or with the theater schedule.
Very well. Then we have Elemental.
Elemental's a kind of a three portrait profile of three activists kind of working in different aspects. So there's an Indian activist who's working on water issues, primarily cleaning up the Ganges and dumping waste into the Ganges River. There's a indigenous Canadian woman who's working on the tar sands project. And then there's a inventor who believes that biomimicry, building machines that mimic the way nature is designed, is the solution to global warming.
That makes sense.
It's Elemental's a film that when I watch it, it makes you want to get up and do some activism.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and part of the whole when we're programming this is, and being a movie theater, is we wanted to pick films that were good films too. So not only about a environmentally based subject matter, but something that could be presented in a theatrical setting that makes sense. So they're beautiful films. They have great storylines, and particularly that one, I think it's really an inspiring film. Really well made, amazing cinematography and access to the subjects as well. So it's a really intimate film. And so each one of these films were chosen, sort of based on that idea.
How many films did you have to, or how many did you evaluate to come to these six?
That's a hard question because Doug and I, we're both filmmakers, so we see a lot of films just in our filmmaking life, and then we both work professionally in the film world, so we see a lot of films through that way. So when we were talking about what films would be appropriate for this, we're also looking at what's currently out there in film festivals, what we think are kind of missed over, unseen films that deserve, another audience. And, if you're in the niche of filmmaking, you realize that there's tons of people doing amazing work, and a lot of that doesn't reach the general population. So part of what I'm super excited about being involved with the Eco Film Festival is to, help be a conduit for getting those great, beautiful films out there to the public.
Yeah, and it's, we handpick all the films too, and it's a curated festival as opposed to a lot of festivals will take submissions and get hundreds or thousands. As of right now, we're just interested in going around to all the other film festivals that exist and just seeing what they're showing and what's coming out. So we probably had a list of, I would say I had a spreadsheet maybe with 20 potential films that I'd seen had already been getting out there and doing well at festivals, whether it's Hot Docs in Toronto or Sundance or wherever, and saying okay, it's an environmental film, but it's also making the rounds at these bigger film festivals, getting, then watching all those films and then narrowing it down to what would fit for the theater and what hasn't shown and what would be good for Portland audiences.
All right. Okay. We've got Doug White and Don Smallman here talking about the Portland Eco Film Festival. We're now up to July's. July is More Than Honey. And this is a film that I saw at the Portland International Film Festival, and will be happy to see it again.
Great, yeah, I'd love to get your take on it. So it's another film that, we saw. Usually we try and do Portland premieres, but this film, when I saw it, I was like, I don't care if it's already played. Like, yeah, there's an audience for this film. It's a beautiful film. Some of the cinematography of the bees I've never seen before. This type of footage. So, what did you think of the film?
Well, I agree with your assessment that it's beautifully filmed and it provides some good background for discussion that it looks at beekeeping, not only the honeybee, but beekeeping from both the commercial beekeepers' standpoint and smaller beekeepers from around the world, as well as the United States. And it is, I think it's accurate in their facts. I think that I will be part of this panel that will be following this film here, and we can discuss it more then, I think, would be
great. Yeah, and that's the idea, is like, every film there'll be, I think it can generate a discussion about not only how the film portrays the subject matter, but then, what's missing from that film or anything else that I think is, that's what's great about a discussion after it. And we're happy you'll be a part of that.
And there's there are many, many beekeepers in Northeast Portland. It's just, obviously, we'll draw from the whole area, but I'm just surprised at how many beekeepers I found now in Northeast Portland, where I keep bees too. So.
Great.
I mean, hundreds. Not just in Northeast, but in California. I mean, in Portland. Okay, then in August, Music Wood is the title.
Music Wood is a film that's close to my heart because I feel a personal connection to the Tongass National Forest, which, if folks don't know the Tongass, it's the largest national forest, and it's in southeast Alaska, and it's a very remote forest, and it also happens to be the main source of Sitka spruce that's used in guitars. So this film is a really interesting examination of a partnership that Greenpeace tried to broker. And in the film, you get to watch the process of the brokering of that. Mm. And it's bringing together people who like Gibson guitars or Martin guitars who are using this Sitka spruce, and it's also talking to Sea Alaska, which is a native corporation in southeast Alaska, and they are cutting a good amount of the Sitka spruce to supply for these guitars. And guitars take up a small portion, I would say, of what's being cut. So you get to watch the kind of Greenpeace being the middleman to broker the deal, and then the two sides of the deal trying to come to terms with how to move forward, be able to still be harvesting Sitka spruce and making a profit, but yet not deplete the resource. And it features a number of musicians. So Yola Tango's in it, and Steve Earle's in it, Khaki King's in it, and playing these guitars. And it's again, it's sort of like an ode and an appreciation to acoustic guitars as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that night where it's the screening, actually, we timed it so it's close to Pickathon. I think the filmmaker is going to come in, go to Pickathon, and then we'll probably have a lot of music that night, too. A lot of acoustic guitar players coming and guitars on display, and so it should be a fun evening.
Okay, that's called Music Wood, and that's on August 9th. And finally, in September 12th, Cafeteria Man.
Oh, so Cafeteria Man, it's a really amazing story about how kids are eating in our school. And it's a guy on the East Coast who's helping transform, you know, that culture there and how kids are eating at school. And so it's a really inspiring film. We're probably going to do a matinee of that film as well to bring kids out for it. It's not on the schedule yet, but I think we're going to go ahead and do that in September.
What do you have lined up for panelists or what's your vision for that, or have you even talked about that? Because I know there are some, at least Portland Public Schools does use some local sources of food and things like that, or is that...
We've been talking to the folks over at Edible Portland at EcoTrust, and so we're going to have some of the folks from their farm-to-school program are going to be involved in the panel for that, but because that's our last screening, I haven't totally lined that panel up yet.
So we're not quite to that one yet.
I'm working on it.
Okay, well, that's the Portland Eco Film Festival, and happening at the Hollywood Theater on Sandy.
Yeah, and you can just go to our website. It's hollywoodtheater.org/ecofilm. And you also, it's on the front page of the website right now, too, if you just go and can check it out, see the full schedule, watch trailers of the films.
And well, let's take a musical break here, Kathleen, and then we'll come back with the Garden Stumper, and the first correct caller will get a pair of tickets to the showing tomorrow. The Symphony of the Soil, is that
great.
Where we're at? Okay. Okay, this is a demo version from Steely Dan, Everyone's Gone to the Movies. Oh, oh, that's the Garden Stumper theme there. Sorry about that, Kathleen. She'll get that. We'll have the, I'll give you a hint that the Garden Stumper has to do with one of the topics of the movies here. So here we go. There we go.
Tell your mama, daddy, your mama, they'll never know.
All right, everyone's gone to the movies, or at least we hope some of you will be going to the movies.
Please.
We have a pair of tickets to give away to the first caller to the answer, who has the correct answer to our Garden Stumper quiz, after our Garden Stumper theme. I think so, anyway. We can just...
hum it.
Well, we did hear it already. Yeah. There we are. Okay, we've got it. It's a two-parter, and it's a fill-in-the-blanks here. We're going to make you work for these tickets here a little bit. So the first caller... with the correct answer to 503-231-8187, we'll win a pair of tickets to the Hollywood Theater's Portland Ecofilm Festival. So fill in the blanks. Two blanks here. Almost all the blank we take were obtained from blank. Okay? Almost all the blank we take were obtained from blank. It's a tough one, but we're going to make you work for it. 503-231-8187. In the meantime, if you have questions about gardening or anything else you've heard, you can call that same number, 503-231-8187. If you have questions on anything that's happening in your garden or should be happening in your garden, now is the time to call us. Jim, what kind of tasks are you doing in the orchard now?
Besides my little breeding project that I'm working on, we're planting. We're putting in new plants, part of our mother block, our evaluation block. That's one of our main tasks, to get those in the ground. It's the rain is a bit discouraging at times, so we have to kind of gauge that when we can do that. Fertilizing, we have sort of interesting, and we use a straw mulch along our plant rows, our main tree rows, and we rake the mulch back and put compost the chicken manure on the bare soil, and then we rake the mulch back over the chicken manure, so and pull a few weeds in the process, and everything seems to be happy. The mulching is really important, and I'd say if you haven't already mulched your trees and garden, it's a good time to get on that. You want to keep those annual weeds that are not going to start growing with this warm weather, that are going to start coming up. So if you can get them cover that soil, you'll have a lot less of those weeds.
Yes, and it's probably even more important to be mulching in the fall.
Yes, but you haven't done it. Do it now.
That's right. Okay, Kathleen, let's go to the phones here and see what we've got. Who's on first?
Hey,
Gonzo.
It's Gonzo.
Good morning, Gonzo. What are the two blanks that we're looking
Guys,
for here?
Hey, Don.
Hey, Gonzo.
Oh, you know this. Are friends available?
I'm going to say medicine and plants.
Well, let's see. Now, we can't give half credit here at all. We got to get both of them right. So, nope, I'm sorry. Gonzo.
Right.
We'll see you at the film festival anyway.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, right. Okay. Kathleen, who do we got? Who's on second? Joe, good morning. You're with the... Okay. Maybe he didn't have the right answer. Okay, so we're still looking for the answers to this question, fill in the blanks. Almost all the blanks we take were obtained from blank. Okay. Well, what I've been doing now in my garden is, well, a fair amount of weeding. It seems, you know, I've been so busy with this bee stuff that the garden has taken a hit. But I've done also some fertilizing. My rule of thumb for fertilizing blueberries is just scratch in some organic fertilizer, kind of balanced the first week of the months, March, April, and May. So that's what I've done. And in time, I did this just yesterday, to just like you were talking about fertilizing, we will get some rains that will help with the incorporation of the organic fertilizer along the blueberries. the blueberry blooms are looking good. It's been a pretty mild year, so.
I just can't talk too much about how nice the spring has been. I mean, we've even had 70 degrees weather over, so we had records for heat.
On a weekend.
Yeah, it was 77.
77, that's right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, right. I don't know. What does that do? Does that, I mean, it helps you with chores, but does it, you know, I don't think it screws up the plants that much.
No, I mean, we're always struggling to have good weather this time of year, yeah. So take it, you know, enjoy it. Dance in those tree rows.
I've also like to fertilize garlic in the mid-April or so, and the same, just kind of use the same pattern, scratch it in. I also scratched in some organic fertilizer around my rhubarb, which is coming up now, and it's 4 to 6 inches tall or more, and really looking pretty good. So,
yeah.
Let's go to the try to answer the stumper, the garden stumper question here. Who do we got? What's on third? Christy. Good morning, Christy. You have some blanks for us?
I do.
All right.
Okay. All of the vitamins we take are made from plants?
Nope. That's not the right one either. Gosh darn it.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for trying.
You know, we could fill in one of the blanks if we need to.
If we need to, we will, right.
Yeah, and then see what comes with.
Well, we can say that one of them has kind of been covered already, but I couldn't give full credit. Right. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so Kathleen's on the phone again. Other things that can be planted now, just virtually any cool season crop can go in. You know, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, greens, spinach, peas, carrots, beets, although you have to worry about slugs on any of these, all of these things that are coming up there, at least in my city gardens, they're in bad. They really like my carrots particularly. Be planting onions, seedlings.
Well, for the night owls among us, there's a great way to deal with slugs, and that's to just go out there about 3 a.m. and pick them off.
Yeah, and you don't even have to wait till 3. You can do it at 10. There's quite a few out there.
Probably even 5 a.m.
Yes.
You know, but they're very nocturnal, those slugs. And they move amazingly fast. Once it starts getting light, they disappear. They just have some sort of like accelerating process that they can put those little wheels out, I guess, and zip off those plants.
I saw a cartoon recently of a slug riding a slug riding a turtle. And then one slugs to the other and says, hang on. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Esteban, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for being there.
You bet.
My answer is almost all of the breath we take is from plants.
Oh, I like that.
Well, that
one.
It was an unforeseen answer. Maybe we ought to give him credit. Kathleen, would you be willing to take his name down and get? Yeah, let's take the comment. But I still will take a second answer for the one that I'm looking for here. We'll start giving some hints. So, yes, well, what's your garden question?
Hello.
Oh, good morning. You're with the Durst.
Hi. Yeah, first, I just wanted to shout out there's a WSU Clark County Extension Master Gardener plant sale the weekend of Mother's Day. And it's amazing, and
all right.
I know I'm biased, but
that's
located on
go ahead.
78th Street across from Grover's in Vancouver.
Great. Okay, that's Vancouver for Vancouver Growers plant sale. That's
yeah,
it.
For WSU.
Right.
My answer would be most of the beets, or most of the sugar we get comes from beets, unfortunately.
Well, it is. I guess, you know, I should have made it a little bit more clear. But it has to do with soil. I'll give them that hint here. Okay.
Oof.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could fill in that. My question here was just about anything now that I think about it a little bit more. I had tunnel vision there to begin with, I guess.
All right,
but
extra credit maybe? No.
That's right. You get our normal price.
Someone else.
Right. Okay, so the hint, is that it has to do, it's soil related there.
Oh, okay. Compost we get is from... fruit?
Well, there's another.
There's
another key word in here, which is the word take.
Yes. Thank you, Jim. That will be.
Make sure we pay attention to that.
Oh, right. That's of the. I should question it is.
All right.
All right.
Well,
next
you've,
person.
Yeah, you've got your plant your plant sale there in Vancouver
okay.
to look forward to.
Thanks.
You bet. Okay, I know Kathleen is on the phone there. There we go. It's still too early to be putting out the warm season crops. It is only April 10th, by the way, and some of the forecasts that I've heard, one low temperature that I saw at least earlier in the week was a low of 34 one of these days in the next week or so.
Out in the country, we can have a frost in early May. I hate to say it.
I talked to somebody a couple weeks ago who was from Bend, and she said that she had heard that there are only 8 days in Bend that have not had a recorded freezing temperature.
Bend is a tough place.
Yeah.
I mean, I really admire the people. The tough,
you can grow a tomato there.
Right. I mean, I would think that some of the fruits like honeyberries, which are come from Siberia, you know, you could probably pull that off. But you know, even people trying to, it's tough to grow apples there.
That's right.
Although I have a funny quick story.
Sure.
A couple of years ago, I went back to Burns because I was my family, one of my great-great-grandfather actually founded a small community in that area. And so I was walking around the streets of Burns and I stopped somebody and I said, well, you know, what can you grow here? And they said they were the member of the garden club. Oh, you can't grow any fruit here at all, you know. And I said, really? You know, so I was walking around a little further. And then I saw this on the ground, a whole bunch of pears laying underneath this pear tree. And I thought, huh, that's kind of interesting. And so it turns out, you know, that you can grow some fruit, even in that high desert area.
Huh.
You know,
because, boy, it gets cold there.
Yeah, it does. It minus is significant.
Okay, let's go back to the phones and see what Justin has. Good morning, Justin.
Good morning. I was going to try to step into the Monsanto minefield and go seed from our plants.
No. And okay. And Jim has the key word there is what we take,
okay,
what we ingest.
I'm going to bow out and let the right answer. Okay. Hey, thank you so much. Have
yeah.
a great day.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. These are good tries here, but it's not what I was looking for. Comes from the soil, and we take them. So vitamins was the closest that somebody guessed there.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, the first guy was even closer there. He said medicine.
Right.
So that's narrowing it down even more.
Right. So we're getting
a certain type of medicine.
Right. That yes.
That we glean from
something to do with
the soil. I didn't think it would be this tough, but I'm glad it is. But it'll be worth it.
Yeah, that's right.
The symphony of the soil there.
I have a gardening question for
okay.
you. Okay. Is it too wet to be working the soil right now? We've had so much rain.
Well, it depends what the condition of your soil is. Not for my soil and not for Jim's soil because it's been taken care of.
It depends on what you're doing. You know,
yeah.
we can't go out and disc or rototill with this type of soil conditions, but, mm-hmm. but you know, we can plant. So we can plant fruit trees right now, or
yeah.
bushes and shrubs.
And for veggies, and you know, the long-term dirtbag listeners will know that I don't advocate rototilling or turning your soil unless you need it for planting purposes or weed controls, mostly that. But mm-hmm. when I plant, all I'm doing is preparing a hole for a broccoli, for example. And if it's a small broccoli plant, then it's just about the size of a cup. You know, I just dig down with my trowel and plant it. And then I put the amendments around it on the surface of the soil,
mm-hmm.
not in the soil at all.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I might mention, too, because this came up recently in a talk I gave down at the coast, and I talk about this a lot, when you plant, especially fruiting, I'm talking about fruiting plants right now, when you put them in the ground, I advise you not to put anything in that planting hole except what mm-hmm. came out of it for a couple of reasons. One is that if you make the soil too rich in that hole, that's where the roots are going to stay and grow. And secondly, you can disturb your drainage patterns by creating a different texture of soil where water will collect and actually hurt the roots there. So, so when we plant, we basically just – you know, we dig a hole and then we put that same soil back in and then we do the fertilizing from the surface.
Right. Everything, all the amendments that people talk about for amending the soil, really we should – Jim, let's coin a new term sometime.
Okay.
Because they're not going to be amendments. They're going to be
– Supplements.
Well, they're going to be on the surface.
Additives.
They're just going to be surface amendments or
– Right. Right.
Sermonments. All right. Let's go to the phones here and get on back on topic. Who do we have, Kathleen? Jake. Good morning, Jake. You're with the Dirtbag.
Good morning. Quick guess at the
okay.
Garden Stumper. Is it water?
No.
Okay.
No, but that's...
I thought that sounded like a good answer to it.
But it is. You know, I suppose most of the water that we do to get is from the soil, don't you think?
Soil.
Rather than surface water. Oh, yeah. I don't know. Right. I mean,
aside from what
you know, our Bull Run, all of Portland, you know, is not from the soil.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Yeah, good guess. Good morning, Roger.
How about nutrients?
No. No, we're gonna have to narrow this down here. The first answer has to do with medicine. That's what it has to do with medicine.
Oh, okay. I thought it had to do with plants. Okay, I'll go back out in the yard and listen to it.
And it's something that we take.
Yes, that we take. So
medicines we take, it's a type of medicine that we take.
Right. And where is it derived from? And it has to do with the soil.
Right.
And I can even tell you it's not plant-based. Okay, Sam, bail us out here.
Okay, I think it's penicillin.
That is on the right track, but
close, no cigar. Okay, bye.
But he's the closest so far.
Well,
it's a type of what we're looking for, but it goes beyond penicillin.
And what is it? What is it? What's the second blank?
You want me to tell you the answer?
No, I'm just saying that rhetorically.
Oh, yeah, right. We need the both answers here. Yeah. Right. Boy, it's too bad we weren't getting giving tickets away to all of our people who gassed there. You'd standing room only there. Okay, Kathleen, are we... Okay, Roselle? Was that what it was? Rosellen. Rose Allen? Rose Ellen. I'm sorry. Good morning, Rosellen.
Hi. I came in kind of late on the question, but I'm guessing minerals.
The minerals that we take come from something in the soil. You know, that might be right, too. I don't know.
But there's a point in that soil. It's not,
yeah.
It's, you know, it's not, yeah. It's not inorganic.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Sorry.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
What does our judge say here?
I nominated myself for that position.
All right. Well, Kathleen, we've just been keeping her hopping there with those phones there, but we got one more here to see. I think this is going to be doing it here. Who do we have? Good morning, Joe.
This is Jim.
Oh, Jim. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Okay. What do we?
I was just going to say minerals.
Oh, that's what the last person said.
Oh,
it's a type of medicine. You know, so minerals are not necessarily considered, they're essential, but they're not, it's not a type of medicine.
I'll have to think about this for a minute. Thank you.
Right. You know, we could give hints that would just give it away here, which we're going to have to here in less than 10 minutes to go here. So the hint would be that penicillin is a type of these.
Yes, penicillin is a type of the type of medicine that we're looking
right.
for.
Right, but it goes, like I said, it goes beyond penicillin. It's almost all of these that we take. Okay, Maria?
Oh, okay. What about antibiotics?
Yeah, that's the first half.
Ding, ding, ding.
And so where are those derived from?
From plants. I'm so glad I got that part right.
Yeah. We need to team up with somebody else. But this, the reason that I wanted this question here is because it shows you how important soil is for us, even, you know, human health.
Absolutely.
And that we cannot live without soil, and not only directly but indirectly, as it turns out here. So, well, I guess we'll have to wait for the second half here of the answer. And then Kathleen's still answering phones there, so we still have tries. Okay, what do we have, Kathleen? She'll get to us.
Hello.
Oh, okay. Good morning, Walt. You have the last half. Pardon?
You there?
Yep, we're here. You have the last half to our Garden Stumper quiz?
I'm just going to guess in pharmaceutical drugs.
Yeah, almost all of the antibiotics, we've got that part.
Antibiotics.
That we take are obtained from what? And that's what we're looking for now. What do they come from? And they don't come from plants. I mean, there are some other medicines that come from plants. A lot of medicines come from plants, which also shows the importance of that.
Okay, I don't have it.
Okay. Thanks. Good, nice try, though. All right, I do want to get I'll just sneak in here. Okay. You're next on the Dirtbag. Good
please
morning.
Hang up. And
hi. Okay. Good morning.
Hi.
You have the answer for us?
Vaccines we take from soil and soil organisms.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Huh? Yeah. You have the last half now.
Well,
not the first half, right? We should give it to her here, because the answer is here that the almost all of the antibiotics that we take are obtained from soil organisms, and in this case, it's mostly bacteria.
You're right. I was wrong.
So penicillin, you know, is a bacteria. And Jim, does penicillin grow in soil? It must. I know when it was discovered.
No, actually, it grows on orange rinds.
Well, it grows in other places too, but you know who discovered that? Now I can't remember the guy's name, but you know the spores floated in from a window above onto his open petri dish and whatever did it. So take her name down, please, Kathleen, and we'll have her tickets there at the Hollywood Theater for the Portland Eco Film Festival. Boy, that turned out to be more of an ordeal than we thought it would be.
Well, I'm just encouraged by all the interest out there in this question.
That's right. So what is going on in the honeybee hive this time of year is massive, massive buildup. The queen, you know, when we get warmer days, they're out foraging a lot because they've got a lot of mouths to feed. And as beekeepers, we don't like to see this rainy weather because they do have a lot of mouths to feed now, so to speak. And if they can't get out and forage, then they have to feed them their honey stores, which could deplete them because they've had to have all of that honey to last them through the wintertime. And now they're starting to build up again. But if they're locked in, so to speak, or locked out because of the weather, they might be inside for a week or so. When it's rainy, they don't fly. But there's just so many things blooming, particularly the maple trees now, the Norway maples and the big leaf maples. And that's a great source of buildup for the honey flow and then for raising baby bees. And the queen bee now can be raising or laying eggs in the neighborhood of 1,500 eggs a day. So she's busy. Hmm. And, you know, everybody's busy in the hive caring for these baby bees. We're also approaching the swarm season, and a swarm is when for various reasons the bees might swarm. We don't really fully, the scientists don't fully understand the swarm mechanism, but it could, one of the contributing factors is overcrowdedness, that there can be so many bees there that they just, it's just a phenomenon of nature that the old queen will leave with, we'll say, half the bees or so, and they'll eventually find a new cavity for their home. And then the old colony, the parent colony, will raise a new queen. So you end up with two queens. It's how they propagate on a colony-wide level rather than just an individual bee level. And so typically this is the time of year where swarms will start, but they won't swarm when it's cool weather. Generally 60 or above is what we're looking for, and I picked up a couple of swarms so far, but both of those were the over the weekend that we had those warm days, March 30th and 31st, I think it was. So, or maybe the second one's the first or something, but we've already had that. Yeah, we'll take questions. We have a caller with a garden question.
Hello.
Good morning. You have a question?
Yes, my question is about cover crops. And I'm wondering, I have a really good crop of crimson clover, and I'm wondering if I can just dig it in and plant right away. Another question about fava beans. I planted the cover crop variety of fava beans, and I wonder if I should let them get mature so I can eat them or not eat that kind of fava beans.
I'll answer the questions in the order you asked. The crimson clover, what I would recommend is, depending on what you're going to plant in the bed, is to not turn it under or work it into the soil. Instead, just cut it off at the ground level, leaving the roots intact.
Great.
And if you're going to plant it, what were you planning on planting in that bed?
Oh, I'm not sure yet.
Okay. Well, if you're going to be planting, you know, any crop that is spaced a foot to 2 feet apart, you know, tomatoes or squash or cucumbers, that works very well for that. Just dig a little hole where you're going to plant the plant, leaving the roots intact, and it'll just be a lot easier for you. And then compost the tops or use it as mulch in that same bed. For the fava beans, I have never eaten a fava bean, and I think generally the variety is banner fava bean that you would use for cover crop. They're much smaller. They'll only get to be 3 inches maximum. And I've never eaten one. Because if you want to get the most use out of your cover crop or the nitrogen that they have fixed to their roots, you don't want to let the plants form seed pods, because then a lot of the nutrients will go up into the plant and form the seed. And so if you can let it flower, but cut it down at the, could just cut it off the root level or at the ground level before it starts to form a pod.
Perfect.
Or let one go and taste it, then let me know.
And so it's not like if I need to plant, I can still just cut off the tops of the fava beans.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Yep, that's exactly what I do. I don't really try to leave any stub or not. So, all right, we're out of time. Okay, well, go ahead, one of you.
The movie Symphony of the Soil is playing Thursday, April 11th at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Northeast Portland.
That's tomorrow.
Exactly.
And the other ones are once a month until September, and they're not necessarily the first or second of anything. It's just
it's all up on our Facebook page, so Portland Eco Film Festival on Facebook.com.
And they're always the first week or second, first or second week of September.
Do you have a website, too?
Yeah, it's hollywoodtheater.org/ecofilm has the full schedule as well, just on our website.
Doug White, Don Smallman, thank you very much both for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Jim, as always, a pleasure.
Yep.
We'll see you next month, May 10th, I believe it is. Thanks for listening to the Dirtbag. Kathleen, thank you very much. Filling in so well for Kurt.
This is KBOO News at noon for April 10th, 2013.
State Democrats are planning on raising a needed additional $275 million in tax revenue by targeting wealthy individuals and corporations. The plan will limit the amount individuals can claim on deductions, starting with individuals earning at least $125,000 and households earning more than $250,000. The plan will eliminate the cap on the corporate minimum tax, affecting corporations with more than $100 million in revenue. The measure also seeks to collect more of the taxes due by multi-state and multinational corporations earning revenue in Oregon.
Salem Hospital and Willamette Valley Community Health are heading to trial to determine how much Salem Hospital should be compensated for its services to the area's indigent population. At dispute is whether Salem Hospital has a valid contract with Willamette Valley Community Health to manage the care of the Medicaid population in Salem. Right now, Salem Hospital is providing Medicaid services at a 4% lower rate than the base rate for other participating providers. A valid contract with WVCH would mean Salem Hospital would be paid more. The impact of the dispute could be in the millions of dollars.
Lengthy permit and approval processes for proposed Northwest coal projects is putting them in jeopardy. The Sierra Club notified the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway last week that it is planning on suing the company and several coal businesses for violating the Clean Water Act. The White House is also considering requests from the Oregon and Washington governors to study the potential impact of moving coal through Northwest ports.
Women-owned firms in Portland show the fastest growth rates in the nation and are expected to generate $13.2 billion in revenue this year. Portland is home to an estimated 69,500 women-owned businesses, giving our city a number 2 ranking in the nation. Portland ranked number 10 in 2012.
President Obama's proposed budget calls for reductions in the growth of Social Security and other benefit programs while still pressing for more taxes on the wealthy. The proposal is an attempt at compromise with Republicans to accomplish broad deficit cutting. However, the plan is already meeting stiff resistance from top Republicans because of its focus on tax raising and from liberals and labor because of its focus on social safety net programs. The proposed plan could reduce budget deficits over $1.8 trillion over the next 10 years. The President and Congress already secured $2.5 trillion in deficit reductions over the next 10 years through budget reductions and year-end tax increases on the rich. If the new plan is approved, it will bring the total to $4.3 trillion over 10 years.
This is Diane Erickson and Patrick Wilson with the KBOO News at Noon in Portland, Oregon. Tune in every night at 5 o'clock for more local, national, and international news. Thanks for listening.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM in Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM in Corvallis and Albany, and around the world at KBOO.FM. It's time for Jazz Lives.